Welcome back to the show, all. I'm your host, Sully, and joining me tonight is singer and podcaster Amy Sinha. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me from across the pond.
guest on over 50 podcasts and just so many different just entertainment sessions that she's got planned and scheduled. We were just like, hey, you know, we were just going back and forth about topics we could discuss, and I was like, hey, you're a Tolkien gal. Okay, well, Rings of Power just came out, so we might as well just, you know, someone's got to cover it. I've seen plenty of podcasts do an episode by episode basis, but I think we can cover it in about 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think so.
Give it our best shot.
There's a lot to dissect, I guess.
Lots to dissect. We'll do as coherent a run as we can. So, The Rings of Power, it is, once again, it's not a reboot. It's a different adaptation. There's a big difference. It's essentially kind of covering some of what the Silmarillion deals with and then kind of going its own route. It is directed by Charlotte Bronstrom, a French director you might know from her various work on similar shows like Outlander, Colony, The Witcher, as well as various other movies and shows like the Dick Wolf franchises, as well as, you know, like FBI in Chicago, as well as Tyrant, Jupiter's Legacy, Stephen King's The Outsider, and Counterpart. The main first three episodes are helmed by J.A. Boyana, two episodes, my bad, who you might know from Jurassic World 2 and the real life disaster film The Impossible and A Monster Calls. Wayne Shi Yip. He's a British film director whose work includes Amazon's Utopia, Doctor Who, Salem, Doom Patrol, The Wheel of Time, Into the Badlands, Preacher, and Secret Diary of a Call Girl. So it is helmed by head writers John D. Payne and Patrick McKay, whose work includes Godzilla vs. Kong, Jungle Cruise, and various other works for former boss J.J. Abrams. They have done a lot of rewriting, and this is like their first big deal. Jason Cahill, who has contributed work to ER and Profiler, is also one of the head writers. He has also written for The Sopranos, Fringe, and Halt and Catch Fire. Stephen Folsom is another supporting writer whose work includes Thor Ragnarok and Toy Story 4. And Jennifer Gudjonsson, you might know from her work being part of the Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul writer's room. She has also written for The Strain, as well as getting a bunch of the Writers Guild wins and noms from her work with Vince Gilligan. So welcome to the show once again, Amy. And were you always kind of a big Tolkien guy? I've talked about it a lot in here, and I'd like to get the guest tape.
Well, I love Lord of the Rings, I have to say. I didn't read when I was younger, so when Lord of the Rings first came out...
No, I'm just kidding.
I did not know what to expect. So everyone around me is like, I've read the book, I cannot wait. So I went to see the first one in the cinema.
Oh, nice.
It was obviously at the end. There was a cliffhanger. And I was just like, okay, this doesn't seem like the end. So I was like looking around.
Not plausible,
going,
right?
And I was like, no, Amy, it's a trilogy.
They made a deal.
So long for this trilogy. Yeah. I know, 3 hours long per film. But I was just taken. I absolutely loved Lord of the Rings. And I actually watched it just about a couple of weeks ago, the whole three in one sitting, because I was trying to recap.
Amazon really went to town. Like, I think HBO Max had the original ones on their HBO Max streaming platform, but Amazon went ahead and just like uploaded the extended cuts of all three movies and free.
I think once I watched The Rings of Power, I had to go back then and watch it all again.
Yeah.
Because just to get kind of familiarize myself with what happened afterwards then.
I'm with you. I didn't read the actual Lord of the Rings trilogy until much later with my grandmother. Yeah. I got through it and it was worth it. There's really, obviously, hardcore fans are going to go, oh, there's a big difference. It's like the really big main differences I noticed were Arwen mainly does fighting in the ghost army instead of in the first movie. Tom Bombadil is a guy who they seek out in the forest, but they deleted that scene because they're like, it's kind of redundant from a movie standpoint, because at the end of the chapter, all he's going to do is say, I can't help you guys. Doesn't work from a cinematic standpoint, so let's omit that chapter. And the elves are at Helm's Deep instead of at Gondor in the third one. So it's, but I had read The Hobbit 3 different times, so that was my only segue in when the movies were coming out on DVD and I saw Return of the King in theaters with my uncle and father. And I'm just a huge fan from there. I wasn't too crazy about the Hobbit movies. I know there's fans. I'm just was kind of like, I don't, I, the graphics look awful. The actor's kind of hammy and the story's kind of meh. And I don't know
what
to feel.
I think from the original Hobbit, because I read the book as well. And I think the films didn't, it just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't
stick with the 70s cartoon.
No, I think they tried to obviously put in the other, you know, the other works of Tolkien.
They didn't know how to summarize it.
Yeah, but I felt that I watched the first, I think maybe I tried to watch the first movie and I got so bored because it was so slow and drawn out. I was like, I could have done this in one movie.
It was cool to see Cate Blanchett and Christopher Lee back again, but at the same time, you're just like, but, you know, is this going to make sense to anyone who hasn't seen the original trilogy, you know, and realize that this comes before that? And then, like you say, it's takes its time with all the journey that really, if you actually read the books, does the book version of Hobbit doesn't take that long. In the second movie, like the escape from the wood elves, you know, it's just like that's literally one chapter and they drew that out to about 30 minutes. I'm like, what is going on here? I mean, that whole action sequence could, you know, we dug the original Lord of the Rings trilogy because they were kind of like, for lack of a better comparison, kind of like Die Hard and Terminator. Like the action is moving the story forward. If you watch something like Luther or 24, every segment matters. Everything is tightly edited. Every moment is going to lead to the next plot twist or character reveal. And when you just stall, like you say, you just kind of, your brain just goes other places. And so, yeah, like you, I saw that people were hating on this. I couldn't tell. Some of it was neo-Nazis online. Oh my God, there's a Black Hobbit. And some of them are just the usual. If they watch a trailer and they don't like it, they're like, that's garbage. I'm like, the trailer is not representative of the movie. That is to do the sell. And I don't do trailers. So I never, like, I might see a TV spot during a Super Bowl, but that's it. I don't bother with that because I get it. It's just marketing. It used to be produced in studio. Now companies don't make time for that. They hire outside companies who basically have to fast forward through the movie and find the first clip that catches their interest. And a lot of the times you get spoilers because, you know,
I never understood the whole race in like The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, because they did kind of make it a thing where the hobbits were accents were like West Country. And then you've got the elves that were very posh. You know,
yeah,
you had, obviously in the Lord of the Rings, you've got the dwarf Gimli, who was Welsh.
There's some dogs in like the one of the brief chapters, and you briefly see in one of the first movies. So it's kind of like you say, it's if you go back to Tolkien's
race. I mean, you could have a black hobbit, and there's nobody to say that. There's no one to say you can't have a black hobbit.
There's zero reason for gatekeeping. It's kind of like to say you can only have males or females. It's like, well, then by default, this world doesn't make sense because someone's got to reproduce. You know?
Yeah, exactly. So I think she could have more ethnic hobbits because there was no one to say that was or white or.
And half the time it's deleted scenes or stuff that doesn't make the final cut. And I'm just like, why are we having this argument, guys? So some of them were just the typical internet trolls. And then I had other best friends who are like, I'm just not interested. I dug it years ago. I don't need any more Lord of the Rings. And it's like, no, it's for me, just going in, I was like, it's a different adaptation. So therefore, it's not, you can't say this is a reboot, you know. And there were still some people.
It's a prequel,
who thought,
isn't it? It's a prequel. It's a prequel to Lord of the Rings, so Lord of Power.
It is, but like it's not following like the necessary, you know, film canon. No. And at the same time, it is kind of like the new Star Trek shows where they're using some of the visual style of like the newer movies, but they're their own deal. It's just kind of to get something in there for everybody. But I mean, it was really amazing to me how some people were just kind of like, oh, this is just a cash in. I'm like, well, the Tolkien estate signed off on this. They were impressed with the direction it was going. And I mean, you got Bear McQuarrie, who you might know from his work on Outlander, Walking
Oh,
Dead, Battlestar Galactica, and so it's just like, you know, he's gonna have a big epic score in there. And I just was like, just go in, check it out. And obviously, unlike most people, I don't do a week by week basis. I wait till there's at least, you know, four episodes, you know.
Yeah, so do I. So I can, I like to binge.
Yeah, because you're gonna forget something. You're gonna be like, oh, yeah. And
I know. I thought it was cool because, first of all, because it was like all the people and places that they were talking about in Lord of the Rings, and they kind of like at the beginning, you're thinking, where is this going? This is okay. Obviously,
the
mentioned
city of Numenor, which has never been seen before, you know, much on screen, and
but it's about Galadriel, really based on her, and she only appears in a short piece of Lord of the Rings. You know, she's the high priestess. So when it was about her, I was thinking, okay. And then I was thinking, gosh, how long do they live for? So how old must she have been in the Rings of Power? So was it 2000? Is it 2000 or 3000 years old? Was she
in something like that? Because that would make sense, because Aragorn's like 1000 years old when we see him as Strider. Right. So yeah, that makes sense that they're a little older. And
Elrond. It was interesting to see Elrond.
Yeah,
as a young that was a little bit freaky.
Young Elrond, so young. And then his boss, who's like the head of all the Wood Elves, say he's played by Benjamin Walker, who you might know from Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. So I made a few jokes, and my sister kept cringing. I'm like, for real, stop bringing up that dumb movie. what's his name from Chef? Not ringing a bell. Okay. Not the chef show.
Not the chef.
Now what's his name? He was on Doctor Who, and
there's a lot of people on Doctor Who.
I know, but he was on he was the one main elderly hobbit who
Lenny Henry,
comedian, and I was just like, yeah, I've seen him in everything, and he's just, even if you don't know him right away, you're pretty much going to recognize his face, and so just seeing.
Well, it was
him.
Interesting that I wasn't expecting him in it until obviously I saw him, and let's not forget that he didn't really appear as a hobbit; it was a half foot. So I've been going, what are the half foots? But obviously, they're distant relations to the hobbits, so
you
kind of, you know, kind of ties that in. And I think I actually like that. I actually like that they weren't actually hobbits. So it was kind of, you know, evolved over the years. They're still small, but, you know.
And as a Sadok character, he was just kind of just very laid back and just very charming one minute. And he's like, yeah, I can buy him as a someone who they follow, you know, who they trust. But and I mean, they give everyone some time. So, I mean, Durin the Fourth was cool because it just allows, you know, it does dive into Elrond, who's just always mentioned before, you know, hey, the dwarves, they were once people I followed, I was loyal to, and he's got a tough predicament. He's having to essentially just say, hey, you know, I got to make my elves, you know, I got to forward their agenda, which is we do need this ore. We do need this iron, you know, to.
But didn't you find it as interesting that obviously you knew in Lord of the Rings, and he said that he was kind of reluctant to fight with men because obviously men had failed them, but he never, like, you never mentioned the dwarves or him being friends. They never made that in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they always kind of did the whole it was kind of like Klingons and humans on Star Trek, different kind of, or even Vulcans. They would always do the whole just long time prejudice and just implication and brief. Right. Dialogue exposition, but not really just show it how it all began. So it is
right. So it was nice to see that they actually did have a strong bond. So they had that friendship. Like then you see with was it with what's his name? Oh God, Legolas and Gimli. Then in Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
then
that same kind of rapport. Them.
Yeah,
except they're not keeping track of who they're killing or who they're adventure they're on. In this case, Durin is just like, hey, are you really my friend, you know, like you say you are, because you've come out of the woodwork literally and I have not seen you in a minute, so explain your
that's
visit.
Because elves live so long, isn't it, like years go past
literally, and, time gets away from them.
Yeah, exactly, time difference is so massive, I think. I see Elrond's point, really.
Oh, totally. And I saw so many just, they sounded like just absolute incel trolls on the internet. How dare there be a strong woman? And it's just like, I instantly dug this tough version of Galadriel. She is literally, wants to avenge her brother's death by the dark forces, and she refuses the king's gift, and she's like, I'm gonna keep fighting. There's this one troubled man who I've met, you know, on the raft, and there's I loved how Hallbrand, this human,
I love that,
and he essentially just, again, you just don't know. And at first I thought he was Isildur, and then, you know, they confirm, Isildur is actually, you know, the troubled kid in the city. And but Hallbrand, you know, is still kind of just essentially just, you know, he gets into her mind as well, and you're just like, whoa, I've never seen Lord of the Rings get psychological, you know.
I think that's what made it good. And I like the fact that they have more female characters. I mean, obviously, in Lord of the Rings, they had hardly any, and they were just the supporting cast. So absolutely. I like the fact that you got the women, because they were strong, especially the elves. They should have major roles in the playing of Lord of the Rings. So I think the
and
way that they showed...
And a miss it moment to showing the Balrog and the Wishing Tree, and it's like episode 5, and Galadriel's having to train all 500 men. You know, she's got, you know,
elves like, have they're the following stamina. Her.
And...
Yeah, I like showing her power. So I think good for female power, really. I don't know if Tolkien probably didn't write that, because we have to remember that back in his time, women were not...
How dare we be progressive?
Yeah, well, you have to be, because I think this day and age, if he lived now, he would definitely put them in more of a stronger role. Especially,
Arwen was a very strong person. And
yeah,
even
but they didn't
Eowyn
show that
was.
in the book they did. In the film, they never showed that, in all
right.
honesty.
Right, and even Eowyn, you know, when she's doing some ass kicking, you still kind of just get distracted by the fact that she's in a love triangle. And it's like, here, like you say, they're trying to get away from that crap. They're just like, hey, here's the premise. Here's what the character wants. Here's how she's going to accomplish it. And here's how she's going to, you know, it's two different things. One of it is she's going to get revenge. The other part of it is she's going to literally determine the entire future of Middle Earth.
Absolutely. And I love the way, I mean, in the Rings of Power, they show the beginnings of the orc. So when we come to the Lord of the Rings, we see what the orcs are, and they're thinking, okay, this
how
is,
they're becoming goblins.
Yeah,
and
how
separating.
Did they become? They became out of trees, or, you know, they cut the trees down.
And I had forgotten Uruk-hai, you know, were technically mutant orcs, elves who became dark orcs. Yeah. And they, like you say, is like they don't treat you like an idiot, and at the same time, they show two sides of the same coin. They basically just go into is like, okay, well, you saw part of that. Let's go a little bit into this. And by the way, we're reminding you, Sauron came in some kind of form before he became the hideous, you know, dark creature that he was consumed by the ring. You know, if anything, Lord of the Rings is an allegory for just, if you consume so much drinking and smoking, but we're kind of undead, you know, just you abused all this power, you lusted after all this stuff that, and it basically crippled you inside and ruined other people. It spreads like a virus. I know, not well timed there, but.
No. I like the way they showed Sauron to be good looking, actually. I like the way they showed that, because you were taken in, because you're like, no, he couldn't be an evil person. Good looking people can't be evil people, can they? So that's it, like your kind of mind plays that. And then so when it came, sorry for spoiling it, but I'm guessing people have seen it anyway. But, you know, when it came to the end and you saw that was actually Sauron, you're just like, oh my, I did not see that coming. I don't know if you saw it coming. I did not see it coming at all.
I knew about Isildur, but they still kind of keep you in some suspense. So like, for fans who are into the book, like I have aunts and uncles and cousins who are big Tolkien guys, and they went right into it. They had no gatekeeping or anything. They're like, hey, I'd like to see this, because it's not a reboot, it's not a remake, it's just a different adaptation. And they we did kind of go back and forth through texts, like, do you think, you know, Isildur's whole storyline is going to be wrapped up, and he will be, you know, the dark creature that is Sauron next, or not No, Hallbrand is becoming Sauron, but all right, are we going to see a conclusion to that? Are we going to see a Zildor, you know, try and fail to destroy the ring? Or are they going to
That's interesting,
that
isn't it? Because right now they're showing Isildur's father. So we're seeing, and his sister. So we're seeing his family, because all we get really from Lord of the Rings is a name. Isildur was one of the kings. He obviously then became the Dark Horseman
The Dark Horse. The Nazguls, I think.
The Nazguls, yeah. So that's kind of how we hear of Isildur. So I think it's nice that we get a picture of when he was younger. I think that's why I like the Rings of Power so much, because they're showing us from the beginning of as far as they can, probably. But I like that. But they don't really show much of Galadriel's life. Like, they show that she's obsessed with killing Sauron and the orcs and getting revenge on her brother, but we don't get that she's married. They never say that to Celeborn. So then we're looking, where is Celeborn all of this? So clearly he's going to come in the second season. Or maybe she did mention it in one of the last episodes. I don't remember. But
I mean, if anything, the elves are kind of like Vulcans, where their adventure, you know, predetermines anything else. But it's not to a point where you're just like, okay, unhappy marriage, you know, because they're still kind of, they try to not be humans. They try to put emotion to the side. And at the same time, it's not always easy because, you know, it's a big task to ask. And but what did you think of the other loyal elf who's having to free his comrade? He tries and fails to save his comrades from the various orcs. It gets so surprisingly pretty violent there. I was like, oh man, but it does it in a way where he's like, you know, it blurs the line between PG-13 and R violence. But it's, I mean, I was just, you know, that and even the later village raid where he's trying to avoid getting stabbed, you know, in the eye. It was like, that was some pretty intense stuff. But
the filming was amazing. I know they spent a lot of money on it. I thought the filming and the acting and the costumes, you know, it was
perfectly choreographed and scored. And no one feels like they're the only superpower. I like how they even show some of the other men who are corrupted, who totally betray and are forced basically by sword to kill, you know, the others it really hits home onto that. It's like, you know, Isildur wasn't the only patsy. There's plenty of others who were corrupted by the ring or surrendered their village only to just be slaughtered anyway. And Ismael Cruz Cordova, I just loved as Arondir, because you might know him from his work on Sesame Street and Ray Donovan.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just a very handsome African-American Puerto Rican.
Yeah, he's good looking. I like the way they had a mixed race elf.
And once again, just so many neo-Nazis. Oh my God, there's a black guy in this. I'm like,
because that reflects the day that we're in.
They exist, guys. They exist. And they're just as human as you.
So. Oh my God, I know. It's just mad. I mean, everybody's looking for equality. I think there was something on TV the other day. I don't know if you've seen Love Actually. Have you seen Love Actually?
Yeah, the movie.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how, what was it, 2001 or 2002? And it shows the main cast was actually all white. And then you've got the supporting characters, one or two were black. It was very no gay people.
Yeah.
It was very un-PC. The jokes are very un-PC.
But I must still make fun of them. What the hell?
But it's so funny. But it's as funny as it was. Like, everyone's like looking to be so PC right now and not saying anything that's going to offend somebody and being all inclusive. But that really wasn't inclusive at all. And I just think it's hilarious. So that's funny when... Now you're saying that some of the people are going, I can't believe there's black characters who are playing, black actors who are playing this. I find that really odd for this day and age. I thought they'd want for everyone.
A lot of them were at one point or another just like evolved, but clearly not, you know.
Well, I don't know. It's just giving me a different take. I really thought that everyone has gone really woke and like, you know, just I love that word, woke, and just include everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta pretty much just remind everyone, is like, if you're not ready for a conversation, then, you know, I can educate you now or you can just fuck off.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, Numenor, they really hit home on They cast, I believe it is Lloyd Owen as Captain Elendil. He's basically the King's Guard, who's just very, you know, underwhelmed by Isildur misbehaving and, you know, getting into fights. What did you think of the Queen, Regent Muriel, played by Cynthia mm-hmm. Adai Robinson, who you guys might know from movies and shows such as Spartacus, as well as Arrow, and how she's still having to just kind of press onward, and you know, there's a volcano attack and she's, you know, blinded by it, and she's having to literally remind him, hey, don't you in any way, shape or form act like I can't help out here, you know.
I thought that was interesting. I mean, it's an interesting,
because we gotta keep motivation, and with all these you know, King's Guards, if I just am struggling and you're not guiding me, then you know, it's just kind of like if you're on a bad movie set, you know, people are going to bail if it's not well run.
No, I just thought that whole storyline was interesting, especially with her father as well, obviously supporting the elves. I think it goes, obviously it goes further. I mean, this is just before the rings are created. So I think it's interesting because I never really thought about that. What happened? Why were the rings created? So all of this going that far back, I mean, I'm not sure what even before that happened. So Sauron, when did Sauron fall and then to Earth and then wanting to take over? So that orcs were already formed. They already evolved. Mm-hmm. And then you had a war between men, elves.
And just all this abuse of power, all this just
everyone.
People can't
and
help
before.
Themselves. It's
yeah, but that was before
this...
the rings. So
oh, but before the rings, yeah.
Before the rings were created.
These schemers came up with it.
So, exactly. So I'm just finding, I'm kind of trying to think back to then where was Nimrod kind of, what's their place? What is their place in all of this?
I kind of got the gist that, now this is just speculation, I don't know for sure, but I think it was just kind of just showing how all these elites, you know, all these kingdoms just kind of came together. And ironically, it kind of was in a way kind of supposed to kind of unite, but it really just, all it did really is just keep dividing and not serving its purpose. But yeah,
elves gave it to them. As a gift for something, I don't know.
it's a bit of everything. They essentially they're having to, but it's cool to explore this because, like you say, everyone kind of just takes it, but you don't really get as much of a characterization with the origin of evil. Much like in either the books or the movie versions of, you know, Lord of the Rings, you kind of would just, you're following, you know, Saruman, the corrupted wizard, and how he basically gave, you know, anyone could be corrupted, including the once trusted, you know, Jedi equivalent that is the wizards, and how he may have captured or converted and even killed other wizards who, you know, left his order or didn't come with him to, you know, be part of the dark powers and consume the Middle Earth. But it is interesting how, it goes into all the various kingdoms and keeps, like you say, you know, once they get past the whole explaining why they've been so separate and not trustworthy of each other. I mean, they even do a good job of showing how the elves kind of don't have the biggest self-esteem to each other. They're like, I will trust you, you know, even though you're friends with a human or a dwarf, right? Right? Okay. I'm warning you. And Elrond, I think, gets even more complex by this. And I had no idea he was on Game of Thrones or the Netflix miniseries Behind Your Eyes, and I was like, oh wow, that's that dude. Wow.
I was thinking I've seen him before.
and either way, a very calmer role compared to, you know, those other shows, which almost always have someone in a very violent or anti-hero role. And it's you got a lot to consume, but it's pretty organized. I didn't feel like there was any episode where there wasn't a half-assed shot or like nothing got accomplished. I just saw so many who just, I typically love, who are just like, I'm just not interested. I'm like, I'm guaranteeing you, you should legit actually check this out. But I'm with you. I am convinced that, you know, the way this show will probably end, regardless of where it goes, you know, they're not going to necessarily, I think, retell what we've already seen. I don't think. No. I think it will end the minute Isildur, you know, seeks to, you know, just try and fail to destroy the ring. I saw one of the writers was in an interview and he said he wanted to make him the Michael Corleone of the Godfather of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, they've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing they probably could play it out.
It's the Darth Vader mentality, you know, how did
Anakin... as many episodes or as many seasons as they can get out of it until Lord of the Rings, maybe, until they start to do the, they've got into the war.
Totally. And I've never seen a more contrarian, like, group of people online, because it just seemed like so many, like, just had no faith in it, because I think when it started, like, being created in 2017, you know, like... Mm. Warner Brothers and the Tolkien estate were in a lawsuit, and then whoever was in charge of, like, the vice president of programming for Amazon Prime apparently was in a big scandal. He was a total pig. Like, we're talking a Weinstein guy. Like, if it didn't have nudity or anything in it, he wasn't going to green light it. And fortunately, they fired him finally for all his misconduct. But I think that's just it. Just the stain of it just sided with everyone, even though, much like Lord of the Rings, this had been filming for a while, you know, in New Zealand. And what did you think of this filming wise, like the locations? Because
it was beautiful. It was absolutely stunning, wasn't it? I mean, the background shot, then the mountain.
They showed different sides of it too.
Yeah, they did. Different, like the scenery. Yeah, they just had different types of weather, different types of scenery and different seasons, it seemed. And I think they paid a lot of attention to filming, and they did pay a lot of attention to the details, especially when Gandalf, you know, and I just thought that was lovely, because I mean, we were waiting at the end, we were like, is that Gandalf, is that Saruman? And especially then when the three witches, or the three,
yeah, they come out of nowhere, you know, and come out of nowhere, kind of like the Nazguls. You're just like, oh, right. Whatever, so like, they represent, they, this can't be good. And but yeah, I was with you. I was like, is this going to be one? I know there was like a brown wizard referenced in one chapter. Who is he? Yeah, he's clearly got a lot of powers, but he doesn't seem
Gandalf.
To.
It's Gandalf. It's Gandalf.
You sure it's Gandalf? Okay.
Well, if you look at the end, then he says something about you can smell your way forward, or you know your way by smell. And he said that in Lord of the Rings. At the start.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it is Gandalf, yeah. Okay. And they obviously said that Gandalf used to love to travel with the hobbits.
Yeah, so we're backtracking, guys. There is this wizard, this stranger.
That fell out of the sky. That we don't know.
Fell from a meteor, played by Daniel Wayman. And we are given a bunch of reasonable doubt as to what he represents and what he does, but they do a good job of making him mysterious, because one minute he's setting stuff on fire, another minute he's defending them. So we don't know if he has control of his powers or not, but.
And because he's lost his memory, so he doesn't
know. He's lost his memory.
He doesn't remember.
Yeah. So, well, we'll see. You know, he very well could even be, I wouldn't mind if they even made him be related to Gandalf, even just like he's part of the Wizard Order or something, but.
I don't know. They never talked about that. So I'd be surprised if he was related. I don't know. Again, we don't know where they came from. We don't know where wizards came from, do we? Did he ever?
I don't think we ever did, because I never got through the Silmarillion enough to know if there was, but. Okay. It would be great to hear from all these other Tolkien experts who we'll definitely have on the show, but it was just interesting in that, much like kind of the creation of any kind of mankind, we're just assuming that one day there was dwarves, one day there were elves, and then orcs.
Well, they say they just created them out of nowhere. They just created them, and then they were, or something. I tried to look online about that, the beginnings of it, and I think that's what it was. They were created, and then they woke up. That's it. Woke up. I think that's what I'm saying. You can educate me on that. I don't know. I haven't read it all.
No, that's fine. I'm down for this, and I don't mind this kind of speculating, because I mean, we're into it. We dig it in its own right, and it's just, I don't see what all the melodrama was about. I really do not, other than, you know, obviously typical trolling. But like, if I'm going to say I don't like something, like I saw some people say they didn't care for like how it was shot, how it progressed, and I was like, I think you guys have either just grown out of Lord of the Rings, or just, I don't know, like, don't get me wrong, if someone was not a fan of, say, books or previous movies of Lord of the Rings, I'm not going to suggest this to them. But then at the same time, they might even like this version better. I don't know. People are strange. You never know until you crack, you know, the egg on the head.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I know my friend wasn't into Lord of the Rings because she doesn't like fantasy.
Oh, that's just it too. Yeah, if you don't like fantasy and dark brooding,
yeah, you're not going to be into elves and dwarves and, you know, all the sci-fi type thing. But, you know, it's interesting that you said like the Vulcans are the same as the elves.
I just always got that gist from it, and I know this was years before Star Trek.
Well, but obviously then the Star Trek copied the Tolkien, because Harry Potter is very similar to, obviously, a lot of things from
Dumbledore. Yeah.
Absolutely. But no, I think you're right. I never put that together, that the Vulcan.
It was
half
the long ears, but
Spock,
it was also just
Spock,
the
half human,
Spock
no emotion.
Putting away emotion.
I get that. Yeah. I didn't put that together, but now I'm seeing that. I completely copied it. Oh, I get that.
Everything's just the side of the same coin.
I love, you know, I love Star Trek. I absolutely love Star Trek. Maybe that's
same.
Why I figured.
Same. And Star Trek's the same deal too. We've had some people talking about how woke it was. It's like, it was always woke and progressive. Yeah. So what is your problem? Did you think it was just a stupid war show with gorgeous people? No.
They had black characters right from the start. So.
Thank you. Yeah. And I mean, there's some Star Trek episodes they play later at midnight because they, much like even some disturbing Doctor Who episodes, you know, they go into allegories for everything from, you know, war crimes to, you know, they're kind of horror themed, or, you know, there's some that even talk about other, you know, and giant social topics like playing God or sexual assault, you know. And so, but most people for the most part just remember, you know, oh, Star Trek, it's an adventure show. It's like, well, that's part of it. It's not the only thing. And I think that's just it with Lord of the Rings. People dug how it's a consumption of, again, just fighting evil, even when there's zero hope. And I think I always do. So here's the other thing. Do you think it's a Christmas movie with all the Christian kind of music playing and how they're always fighting in the stuff?
I'm not sure it's a Christmas. Well, I think it's a Christmas movie because maybe the family, even children, will kind of.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah, I think anything is a Christmas movie. Like Elf, right? So you've got that.
Oh, there you go.
Adults who love children who
Die
get
Hard's
the analogy
a Christmas movie.
From. Yeah, I think anything that's like Avatar that's coming out, I'm sure that's going to be.
Yeah, that comes out every December. That's a Christmas movie.
Like Spider-Man. I know people think it's for young people, but I love Spider-Man. I watch that every Christmas.
No gatekeeping. Love what you love. I saw this one wacky kids movie the other day that had some fun sci-fi elements for the adults. So, I mean, so many people just act like because it's a certain genre, you can't like it. And it's just like, don't deny yourself.
Well, I think it's love. I used to love Shrek. That was my favorite movie, and
animated.
I think that was
cool.
I love animated movies that were kind of for adults, but because it's an animation, kids love it too. So I love it when they've got that double entendre that, you know, what they're talking about.
Oh,
the
adults
laugh as well, but the kids laugh as well because they don't really understand what they're talking about. I love like Toy Story. I love all of those kind of, you know.
Yeah, especially early Pixar and DreamWorks. Yeah, it just seems like. So many people just restrict themselves. So I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know why they would want to restrict themselves. All together. I mean, I dug Durin the Force wife Deeza. She was really hysterical. Yeah. Like she's like, oh, that elf. She's keeping. You know, I'm not going to sit here all by myself, drink wine, and eat all this food.
Okay. You know? She was Scottish. They made them Scottish. Did you
they
see
made
that?
Them pretty Scottish. Pretty hard to miss that. Yeah.
That's quite funny. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But I like the way they showed the beginning of that fire creature. I can't remember what it's called now. The one that actually killed Gandalf at the end.
The Balrog. Yeah.
The Balrog. Yeah, I like the beginnings of that. That was because obviously over thousands of years then that has been there. Below the chasms of, you know,
seem to vaguely recall like one site briefly said that, you know, they're kind of demon type creatures, you know, as part of the various rings, you know, evil energy, but there's more than one of them out there. But yeah, I mean, what you know does help fill in the gap, regardless of if you only know part of the whole puzzle. I mean, like, I knew about Gimli's cousin Balin, you know,
right.
When I saw the Lord of the Rings movie, and that, you know, that instantly made sense to me. Oh yeah, Balin, he was one of the dwarves who went with Bilbo, you know, on the scavenger hunt in The Hobbit. And so it, same kind of deal here. He's like Durin, yeah. You definitely have heard him somewhere mentioned, I think, in a verse of The Hobbit. And so we just,
he
like,
was in
okay.
The Hobbit, wasn't it? Durin was in The Hobbit.
Okay, yeah, that makes better sense. So
no, I know, I'm asking, was he? His name actually up. Does
Durin The Hobbit. If it was, it's probably the fifth. Okay, so
was in The Hobbit?
Durin was the oldest, the seven fathers of the dwarves. And okay, I need to know what he appears in. I know he's mentioned in A Journey in the Dark in the Fellowship of the Ring book.
Yeah.
But is Durin the fourth?
Or was that? Maybe he wasn't, because Bilbo obviously was in The Hobbit. So it was Durin before that, all of that, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe. It was before that. But I mean, yeah. I think you're onto something. I do think, and I like how they show his father, the third, who's like, you must take the mantle of my dwarf empire.
Yeah, and that's not funny.
So I'm going to, there was one great quote from it, and I repeated it to my father, and he was like, you know, he's, my father's taking a break from movies and shows. He just watches sports and comedy now, but he's like, I'm not going to lie, that's a pretty badass quote you just gave me. Where did you hear that from? And I love how, again, Durin just says this to Elrond. He says, a dog may bark at the moon, but he cannot bring it down.
That is a good quote.
I love that quote. And I'm looking at my other notes, and in my notes, I had Elrond is charismatic, unexpected mutiny, Galadriel's badass, and what the fuck kind of name is Brandyfoot?
Brandyfoot. Alcohol, clearly. They're clearly like, maybe that's what it is. That's how why they travel and can exist in the cold, is because they're on alcohol, or they're taking.
They're on alcohol, yep.
Maybe, and, or marijuana. I don't know. I always thought of that. Maybe like this. I don't know.
The subtitles are good to have, because they do show you actually the names of the songs, which they're adapting from the text. Kiss the Stone was one they played.
I thought the music soundtrack was really good.
Oh, it was sexy. It was great. Yeah. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I loved Inya's work on the original movie, but I mean, this was something very unique in its own right. And, when it uses slow motion, it uses it pretty well orchestrated without feeling like a cheap, you know, Matrix type edit.
I love the Matrix.
Love the Matrix. I'm just saying, you know, when people imitate it, you know, it just was kind of like when all the other blockbusters that people would try and imitate, you know, now it's got to be like Commando, it's got to be like Terminator 2, it's got to be like Rocky, but they're not paying attention to the actual themes. They're just trying to imitate a shot that is otherwise kind of out of place with whatever movie or show it is. So they described in my notes, they said that the ore is lighter than silk, the minerals, the elements that Elrond wants to give to the elves to fight, you know, to, it's like they were using it to like create weapons and everything to fight the dark power, and they're like, if we do not use it, we will actually perish, and they'll get this and wreck the earth. But they said it was, the ore was lighter than silk, harder than iron, and dearer than a diamond.
I thought that was good, because well, obviously we're like, what's so special about what material the elves have made? What was so special about the sword that Isildur had, you know, to kill Sauron?
So just like getting certain kinds of armor and everything. And,
and I don't know, I just like the way they showed how the rings, what was the initial,
why do they prize reason? All these mines? Why is there why actually doing they did it?
Why
it's more than just gold?
So why the elves actually got them first? That was interesting.
Yeah.
Why they did that
is like, I always got the gist that they're basically a symbolic of like blue collar workers, while the elves are kind of like the British royal guards. Tolkien basically was during World War One, and I loved how at one point Galadriel was just like, sorrow cannot ease my pain.
Sorrow cannot ease my pain.
Yeah, she said it.
Sorrow cannot ease my pain.
Either someone said it about her, or she said it in episode 5. Yeah. I can't remember. And it was like,
that's an interesting quote, actually.
Oh, totally. It's just because, again, you know, it's just like that. To just rest, you know, you got to give yourself a breather. But it's kind of like anger. You know how we always talk: just take a simple deep breath.
Yeah.
You know, don't meditate, but just long deep breath, and then you know it. I would always hear various TV show like showrunners, most infamously David Chase on The Sopranos, would basically give themselves 20 minutes to be angry and then figure out what to do when some disappointing news came first, like an actor's quitting my show, someone refuses to do what I've asked. And I'm saying whatever works for you, but I personally see no point in just being nonstop angry, you know, just stressing out, you know, giving yourself a heart attack. But
well, you kind of, when you're in that state of mind, the decisions you make are not good. They can't.
They're
be good.
Always so, heavy-handed because you're blind about that
so
anger.
You can't. They say don't act out of anger. So it is. You calm yourself down, or don't make decisions in the evening. I always find in the nighttime that my mind is just more intense and just overthinks, and then I need to go to bed. So it's like, don't make a decision. And then when you wake up in the morning, it's like, you do. It's so true. You have more of a clear head. You're thinking, okay, actually, it's not as bad.
You are refreshed. I mean, there's a reason they say sleep on it.
Like, absolutely.
It's not going to get done now. You'll be more angry that you've been up all night angry, and you still are going to be unproductive during the time when you should be getting something done.
Exactly. So it is take a deep breath and then relax.
Totally. Would you say that Sauron is basically Frankenstein's monster?
Sauron?
Yeah.
When he was, well, he...
Because, they're assuming... what's his name? They're assuming Adar, the evil elf.
Yeah, Adar, right. So, Sauron. But then didn't Sauron create... Well, wasn't he the master of Adar? Was that Adar? Was Sauron Adar? Sauron was a different incarnation.
They implied he was Sauron near the end, but it was so funny. They capture him and he gets away while talking about Sauron. Yeah. And so he's the Keezer Sozi of The Usual Suspect.
Do you think he's Sauron as well?
I think they pretty much have implicated that he's Sauron, because
the Adar, he used deception
to say, I'm not Sauron. I can lead you to him. And then it's like, no, I'm Sauron. I've been playing you guys for a fool. Because remember, he gets away from the elves when they capture him.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. So it could be everywhere at one time.
Everywhere at one time. And because...
like God, then the devil.
He started out as a misled elf and then became the leader of the orcs. And, I mean, even before we see him on screen, when Arondir and company are being captured, he essentially is like, well, I mean... you fear me, now you see me in the flesh, and everyone's even just apprehensive about just, you know, even just, you know, tying him up and, you know, stopping him. But
and let's not forget the that kind of hand weapon thing that has been throughout. I mean, I thought that was pretty interesting what it actually did. It started the whole earthquake and the fire of Mordor. Do you think that created the volcano?
Wait, my bad. Hold up. So Helbrand is technically Sauron.
Right.
He's invaded Galadriel. So Adar might just be maybe one of the Witch Kings, I guess.
Oh, I thought you said he was everyone at once. No, it's kind of cool that if he is like different people.
I mean, that could be it too. I wouldn't be surprised if they even do an about face of 180 and say, you know, here's the real version of Sauron. He's just, you know, I would not mind if they took a shapeshifter aspect.
But then you do have Sauron and Adar in the same place at once fighting each other.
That would be cool too. It's like whoever...
But no, do you remember out in the forest and he's trying to take
That's right. Yes. And it's almost like a pass the torch. You're going to be the next evil badass.
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting then.
Because there's plenty of bad men.
Yeah.
You know, who you see, you know, in pirates and everything, and the book fleshes it out a little more of Lord of the Rings, in that they, you know, they can all be brainwashed. Like the ring doesn't even have to touch them. Like the evil will just spread. Word will say, okay, I'm just a random badass minding my business. I must now fight in this possessed, you know, army for zombies, right. You know? And yeah. So if anything, you know, Lord of the Rings just goes back to the whole, just, you know, be careful what you wish for. It's not necessarily right. A monkey's paw, but it does go into just like,
power. It's all about power though, isn't it?
All everyone about power.
Power. It's, I
mean, that's everyone's all about... got their reason, but, and, so there's 11 rings that they create. So, yeah.
Three for the elves.
Three for the elves.
Five for the dwarves.
Five for the dwarves. Okay.
Seven so. For the realms of men. Seven for the men.
Okay. Someone.
Hang on, how many was it? Was it three for the wizards? How many for the? I can't remember how many for the wizards.
Okay, did so you just said three for dwarves, five for elves. So
no, three for the five for the dwarves. No, three for the elves, five for the dwarves. That's eight, and then okay, seven,
so seven
for yeah. men. How many is that? 15?
No, no.
How many were there? Nine.
11. So.
Oh, hang on then.
Okay,
on.
So. No, it's all good. So 11. Let's just assume that for sake of argument, yeah, there was eight that were given, just elven, dwarves combined. Let's just say eight of those are out of the way. So then if we got 11, then we got to just figure out what are the three remaining ones. Yeah.
So I think it's to the wizards.
Okay, so either the wizards. Because I don't think they gave them to mankind, because they knew mankind.
No, they did. They gave seven to men. They gave seven to men, ordinary men.
Okay. So,
did they? Let's,
I will have to re-knowledge it. I hope.
Oh, God, now my mind is gone. Who did they give seven? I thought they gave seven to men.
Let's look it up. 11 rings. Okay.
Yeah, seven to the men. Yeah.
Seven to the men. Okay. That was a mistake.
That was a mistake, yeah. And then there was one ring to rule them all that Sauron okay. made, this and he one, didn't tell anyone.
This one older college, sbu.edu, says, fleshes out. So three rings for the elven kings.
Oh, yeah.
Seven rings for the dwarf lords. That's too
seven
much.
Seven dwarf lords.
And nine
to the men.
Mortal men, and one right, for the dark nine. Lord. So,
there
yeah.
you go. Okay. All right. None go. To the...
The man
none.
Who betrayed us all, the dark lord, Sauron.
Dark lord. I said it. None to the wizard then. I thought they gave to the wizard. None to the wizard.
Yeah. The wizards, they got their powers, so they don't need shit.
three,
sorry, guys. Again, and I mean, that goes back to even the first scene that's dramatized in Fellowship of the Ring, where Gandalf is like, do not, you know, he can't touch yeah. the ring. He knows that he will do everything wrong and lose any concentration, basically kill everybody in the village.
Yeah, but they never actually said where those seeing eyes came from. And there was how many of those? Three or something? Three of the gold, you know, the glows.
Yeah, I hope they can flesh that out a little more. But overall, I mean, if you had any pros and cons to sum up, but what's the lowdown that you'd like to sum up on season one of the show so far?
Sum up. Well, we have Sauron and we know where the rings started and how they came to be.
Okay,
and I think that's probably the summing up.
That's a pro. Any cons, if any, you know, other than kind of wanting a little more detail on the rings?
I think it was, I mean, if I'm honest, it was hard keep watching it because it was slow. I did find it slow.
Oh really? Okay.
The first yeah, couple I did find the first two maybe slow, but then I think as it went on and they mentioned more people, or we saw more people that are familiar, then right. I was like, okay, then I started to relate more, and then it
fair
got
enough.
More action yeah. then it became more action-packed, and mm-hmm. I think that's when yeah I think that was my initial. But I think the con, maybe people were getting hard to get into it because they were, you know, but you know what, granted though, all shows are like that. You have to
yeah.
set the theme. It has
you gotta
to be
make time
slow
for it. If and you watch it at 2 in the morning, you're not going to make any sense of it. Yeah,
right. I mean, the first Lord of the Rings, that was brilliant, but that was kind of a slow, it was a slow start, and then it was
yeah
then the second and third, they were just action. I mean, my favorite one was the first one, but it did have to tell the story. And I think you always yeah. have to do that for shows. Otherwise, you're not going to get the gist of all of it. So I don't really think that's a con. I think they were trying to set the scene. But I do understand some people, like I did, find it a little bit tough going on the first couple.
Okay, fair enough. I got into it because there was enough like eye candy and just like
the
but also just the budget, like I it just yeah. showed, and I I really dug the art direction and design and establishing shots instead of feeling like, okay, they're just catering to teens. They're catering to just, you know, mindless crowd. I didn't feel like the tone was out of place or like you say it. I mean, I'm kind of used to just those slow, you know, responding sessions, I call it, where you just sit down, have a sit down and everyone talks. And I get it. It's not always everyone's cup of tea. I just was kind of intrigued. It's like, okay, I feel like the show has its own voice, so I'm comfortable with it, as opposed to now just copy and paste. It's fun, but it's not going to, you know, have much of an aftertaste, you know? So I thought for this, it was very comfortable being its own deal. But yes, if anyone's just going to watch just one or just, I don't know.
No, you have to watch more. I think you have to watch more than that one. I mean, there are some shows that, like 24, which is right from the start. There's action. And then, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen Outlander. You mentioned it. I mean,
Outlander's a good example, but
slow, but halfway through the first, then it gets interesting because she time travels into the past. So I think different shows. We talked about shows,
it with a few fans of also the books, and they found it interesting how what areas they play it safe, let alone which ones where there's like, this needs to be elongated more because you need to make use of your time on this area. And I mean, kudos to all these showrunners. They've all worked on giant deals, but I think the deal is once you get past whatever genre you're a fan of, you know, they still are following all the screenwriting rules, which is this is a typical trope of this genre. Here's why we flesh this out. And I will give them some applause because, you know, Game of Thrones kind of really didn't do it for me after 8 years. I know many are like it or hate it. And I was just kind of like, interesting start.
Was that after the book stopped writing and they didn't have the best script writers?
I think that's just it. I think they got too comfortable taking stuff from pages and then they had to pull it out of somewhere else. And then it was just like, so all these characters are now doing decisions where you're like, where did that come from? And it seemed like you were trying to take over these kingdoms. And now you're fighting with this person and that. And so, I mean, Lord of the Rings was always just, I don't want to say singular, but still a pretty easygoing point A to point B. It's just like Dune. There's a lot of wordplay and you have to be in that moonset. But it is interesting in that basically, they follow a group of characters, they get allies either now or later while on their quest to destroy the ring. And it is interesting how, I mean, even with The Hobbit, you know, same kind of deal.
Yeah.
Will Bilbo survive or die helping Gandalf and these dwarves, you know, take back their kingdom's fallen kingdom's gold, you know?
I think it's like any, I mean, everyone copies now J.R. Tolkien. I mean, he was like the original, like C.S. Lewis, you know, you've got the C.S. Lewis,
even blockbusters like Chronicles of Riddick and just all of this stuff. And
you've got all of those, everything that you see now is something or another based on that kind of, you know,
character. We got to have an established kingdom with different species and different standards. But, you know, it, like you say, it then becomes a puzzle of which one actually has a soul and which one is just kind of too popcornish, where you're not really all that invested.
Exactly. Which ones will relate more to this modern day age?
Which ones did they spend too much time on the makeup and not enough time on the story? I mean, that's actually what Babylon 5 was all based off of, you know.
That's true.
Did you ever know? Did you ever see that one?
Which one, sorry?
Babylon 5.
Babylon 5. I saw a little bit,
sci-fi adventure, but they always start off.
I love, I've seen
the telling of the third age.
I've seen most of everything. I don't know if you remember, you're probably quite young, so I don't know if you remember Sliders.
Sliders is good. Red Quantum Dwarf. Leap
was the ultimate for me, because that started it, that my sci-fi love, and then obviously the X-Files.
X-Files. It may not be Tolkien-based, but they, Cigarette Smoking Man is basically Sauron.
Exactly. And then you had I can't remember, it's like the Sandman King, and I can't remember what that was from now. Anyway, they had these different in the 90s. It was like late 80s, early 90s. They were really hitting the sci-fi, like really, really big. And
Captain Power.
Yeah, exactly.
Space Precinct.
Indiana. And then it's just
Erie, Indiana, yeah.
Yeah, all of these just came at once, and I just, yeah.
They came and they went, and then the DVD releases until years later, some due to music rights, and you're like, for real?
Stargate, and then they come out with loads of different Stargate
really
ones.
Feels
and,
like they try to copy Lord of the Rings budget after O2, because they do have a pretty epic storyline after borrowing and then kind of becoming their own deal. Is like, here are these Egyptians, aliens. I mean, even Gods of Egypt is kind of Lord of the Rings now.
Right. And again, those like shows started off like the same thing. So you're getting a little bit bored. And then as you're actually getting bored, because it's kind of the same thing, then they throw in a twist.
They were feeling it too. They're like, okay, what's going to make any of us want to come back and do another year of this?
Right. Got to
change it up.
No.
And unfortunately, like you say, the markets were getting oversaturated. People would stay in too many corners. No one wanted to learn from the other how people who were working on procedurals or doctor shows didn't want to work on sci-fi or horror anthologies. And it was just like, well, it's all part of the same dilemma. It can all be good. It doesn't have to be bad.
But there's only so many things you can do now with parallel universes and obviously with the multiverse. I mean,
multiverse time.
I don't know what else you can do with it. I mean, it's like, I'm not sure. I'd be interesting to see, especially with Spider-Man, how they come up with something entertaining.
The bosses at Marvel and even DC have kind of admitted is like they pretty much want to go for, Doctor Who, Star Trek 4, and even Back to the Future level of show, an alternate outcome. And especially Infinity War and Endgame kind of do go for kind of a Terminator and Lord of the Rings kind of deal. Is like, now we're undoing the past, and now we have to do this epic battle and maze of about, 20 million people to fight through. What do we do now?
Right. And you bring in every character that you know, and it's just like, okay.
And to this show's power, though, I mean, I will applaud them for just the last three episodes really just meshing right into one after the other. Yeah. They were all about, and now we stall. Like, now we stop here. It has to end here. Otherwise, we will leave you with too much to think about and unanswered, or we're oversaturated to where, again, just like they don't try to overwhelm you at the start, they don't try to overwhelm you at the beginning, on a cliffhanger. They just like, okay, now that you know who are the real bad apples, who are the real ones pulling the strings, now we can end it there, because you got to process this for a year, but until this comes back. So
I know. I mean, I love the way that the end shot was him, Sauron, walking back into Mordor or whatever. They were.
Yeah, like it was a total suckers, played you all for fools. And it's like, you need a villain to do that, because he's earned it, unfortunately, as a villain.
Interesting how he didn't kill Galadriel. I mean,
he didn't try to seduce her per se, but he did try to just kind of make her see into his vision, and then once she basically punches out of his vision, she basically he's like well, that was a waste of time.
Well, it shows his true intention, and it wasn't just to kill people, it was to turn everyone evil.
So basically, maybe it's a symbolism for awful political parties. They want to brainwash you.
Yeah, maybe.
I want to talk to people just like me. Yeah, there you go. It's a chess game, but they don't want
to. Isn't it? You're not. Your aim is not to kill the king. It's to capture the king.
Yeah. And unfortunately, she doesn't even want a stalemate. She basically just threw the entire chessboard off the table and said, "We're not playing this game anymore."
No, I like her. She's cool.
I was looking at what she had done as that actress. Her name is Morfinn Clark, and she plays Sister Clara in the similar show His Dark Materials.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
It was on HBO Max. The Personal History of David Copperfield, but she's also was in the horror mystery, playing the title role of Saint Maud. That was a 2019 movies, but yeah, she's a Welsh actress, and I was just like, when I saw her first on screen, she had a way, is like, whatever you say, I believe you.
Yeah.
Whatever you're gonna say right now, I believe you.
She's good. I do like her. It's interesting to see these lesser known actors come out. Yeah, I mean, I just love, like, it's like no longer the age of you make a big movie star, you come out in cinemas. I think it's now even the big movie stars, they're going to Netflix or going to Amazon Prime. And I just kind
it
of
wasn't
like,
we must pay someone $30 million an episode and everyone else gets paid diddly. And it's
but
just
this is how actors and actresses are made, though. That's how the actors of Outlander were made.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but they, you know, Outlander, I watched from the beginning when it was not popular. I thought it was brilliant. And
it was a slow burn.
And it came at the right time
on Stars, because Stars had a lot of the former guys who had done programming for HBO, and they were looking, is like, what can we do that is atypical, that is not something that everyone sees, you know? And
the acting was amazing right from the get-go, and it was so real. It was like really like the blood, the gore, the scenes. It was just like, oh, but it was just, it's just so, and that's what I mean. It's like, you don't need to have a that billion budget.
You don't
to
need
make
a billion.
Show.
Yeah.
No.
It doesn't need to be extra low budget, and it doesn't need to be like millions to where you hear after the fact, oh, so-and-so was late to set every day. Oh, you spoiled guys. But yeah, she's done all kinds of things. She's guest starred on The Alienist. I don't know if you've seen that period drama.
No.
It's set during the 1890s. And she was also in the Crocodile Creature Feature Crawl, as well as the virtual reality film The Call Up and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And I just thought, you know.
Oh, yeah, I heard of that. I didn't watch it.
So, I mean, reliable B-movie star. But I just thought, hey, you know, it's just, this is a different kind of role for everybody here. Like, again, you know, I've never seen Adar or the Zildor guy in anything. If I have, it was a bit part role, probably, you know.
I think they've become big after this now that they've been catapulted. Give them more, like, even if it's not very good, they'll get publicity around it because it's the most expensive drama that
they have to at this point.
So they will become famous now. They'll get like everything. It's like Tom Holland, you know. I don't know if you've seen Lucifer. Not Tom Holland. No, have you seen Lucifer?
Yes, Tom Ellis, I think.
Tom Ellis, like he was in a comedy, and
he was on Miranda.
And I never gave him a second thought in that. I was like, okay, no, he's fine. And then when I saw him in Lucifer, I stood to attention. I was like,
that dude is
okay,
my guy crush.
Like that. Not what he's different than I thought, you know. So and that kind of catapulted him then from that. So different roles.
1000%. It was I would actually pay to see him come on this show.
I know. Oh my god, he'd be brilliant.
I could see him being one of the other villains or heroes.
Yeah.
This has been a delight talking about this with you, because it's just, it was a pretty straightforward sit down about a very complex show.
Very complex.
What do you have coming up on, your voice of inspiration?
My voice of inspiration? Well, I just do a lot of voiceovers, really. So, like, adverts and commercials.
Cool voice.
And animation. Oh, thank you very much. I like doing children's voices.
I'm working on audio drama myself. So.
What are you working on?
That's actually what I don't know yet. I was part of the crowdfunder with a audio drama pal, and she's like, I think I know exactly the role I'm going to give you. I'm like, awesome.
Oh, we'll have to put it out there. I'll have a
fun. This is it. You're like, anyone can kind of just challenge, you know, themselves to.
I think you can. I think like you kind of, people, it's not as hard as, but it takes a bit of work. It doesn't just come overnight, because I guess when you're doing like audio for other people, you're kind of, you know, what they want, not what you want. So it takes a bit of,
I mean, that's
engineering.
What they say, everyone who I've heard talk about at auditions has said the same thing, like, do something different. That's what they're looking is, can you take direction? Can you just go in a, can you be inspired to go in a direction that no one thought you could go in? You know, just,
but at the end of the day, you can't take anything personally, because they have some idea of what they want in their head.
You're seeing 200 people every day.
Right. So if you don't get it, it's really not about you. So you have to have a thick skin when you go into things like this. It's just the way it is. Like any entertainment business, I think a lot of people take a lot of things personally. So you have to cut yourself off and go, it really isn't you. It's just not your time. So yeah, it's fun though. It is fun.
1000%. Who's been your favorite batch? You've interviewed a few celebs. Who's been your favorite one to take on? and interview?
Well, I don't know. In the music industry, it's kind of, I'm a jazz singer, so that's how I started out. And so one of my favorite jazz singers, musicians at the time, was Buddy Greco in America, and he was part of the Rat Pack. So
the Rat Pack, yeah.
When he was younger, and he came over, yeah, I think he'd been over to the UK a couple of times, but I got to meet him like 10 years ago. And I got to interview him. I don't know how I got the interview, a friend through a friend, and knew the manager. And it was one of my biggest ones. And then unfortunately he passed a few years ago.
Yeah, but rest in peace.
I got to spend the day kind of hanging out and then going to the show, when probably that was, and Kyle Eastwood, Clint Eastwood's son. So
yeah,
he's an amazing bass player. And again, he lives in, well, he did live in France at the time. I don't know about now, but he was, oh my God, phenomenal, phenomenal bass player.
Do you have any music projects that you're working on?
I don't know. I kind of taken a sidestep, kind of a step back. I mean, I still do the singing over voiceovers, but I haven't done live performance since before COVID, actually. So let's see where that goes. I would like to get back into it, but I like the voiceovers right now.
Oh, totally. And well, if we see something for you, we'll try to get you cast. So this has been a delight having you on here. And anything else you'd like to promote before we take
off? No, you can come to my social media. Say hello to Amy Sinha. AmySinha. Yeah. Come chat about Lord of the Rings and anything fantasy and sci-fi and supernatural and anything out there. I'm
be part of her there. Rock and roll fantasy. I don't know.
Yes, so we'll have for a conversation about anything.
Badass. Thank you ever so much for being out here.
Thank you.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.